So I have here a little kit that I call the blindness kit that I have already made up.
Don't be alarmed, but this is cosmetic Dr. Sarah Hart showing me her special emergency kit in case things go wrong while she's injecting derma filler into a client's face. There's a reason she calls it a blindness kit.
Which is that if filler went backwards down an artery and got to the back of the eye, that's a devastating side effect that all injectors need to know about and be ready to have an emergency procedure instituted in that situation.
Every member of the New Zealand Society of Cosmetic Medicine must have an emergency kit that enables them to dissolve the filler. But it's not mandatory in the industry. What's more, you don't have to have any medical qualifications to do this treatment. I'm Sharon Brett Kelly, and today on The Detail, cosmetic surgery, appearance medicine, beauty clinics, laser clinics. The industry is exploding. The clients are getting younger.
You know, there are a number who are driven by social media and who have these dysmorphic states where, you know, once they start, they can't stop and they overdo it and they don't realise how bad they look. And there's no one to guide them.
And things can go wrong.
They get scarred and they have a difficult time, or they get bad staph infection or something and burns and so on. It eventually ends up with ACC and nobody knows what to do with it.
We'll delve into the rules and regulations, or the lack of it, in this industry. But first, we're in Dr. Sarah Hart's Ponsonby Clinic.
Really, my main equipment is my hands. These are the most valuable part of equipment. And what I like is that they don't break down the way that big machines do. Mm-hmm. So what I have here is I have gloves, mm-hmm. I have antiseptic, I have the equipment that I need to deliver the injectables. So here we have cannula, which became popular as a way of more safely administrating dermal filler. Mm-hmm. Here we have needles, and you can see these needles here are for administrating botulinum toxin, but that's not what they were designed for. These are insulin syringes that are designed for giving insulin. And so you can see that's a really tiny little needle.
Yeah. And most people would know it as Botox. So is that the main ingredient that you're using here?
Yes. So Botox is the brand name. So it's a little bit like Xerox or Hoover. There are three good brands in New Zealand that are approved in New Zealand, Botox, Dysport and Xeomin. They're all really good brands.
What else have you got?
This is a mirror, very important. Yes. So when I'm doing treatment, when I'm doing consultation, I like my patients to look in the mirror and point out what their concerns are. But also when I do treatment, I'm periodically showing the patient, if I'm doing a dermal filler treatment, what it looks like, because dermal filler is very much like sculpting. And the change happens as you do it. And so when I'm working with a patient, I'm wanting their feedback on, you know, their thoughts on what the endpoint should be. And then I can guide them as to where that endpoint is as well with regards to the swelling and other things you might see on the day.
Yeah.
So mirror, very important.
Yes.
You'll always see these in a cosmetic doctor's room.
I hope so. Dermal filler, maybe you should also explain that.
So dermal filler is a gel that you inject in and it physically takes up space in the face. And the dermal fillers I use are all made from hyaluronic acid, which is a natural carbohydrate component of the skin. We find it in very large amounts in the skin, the joints, the eyes, cartilage. And it decreases over time. So it's at its highest when we're born and then it goes down over time. Now, hyaluronic acid is a molecule that sucks a lot of water to it, and it has a supportive role in the body. It helps the body make collagen. So what they've done is that the companies that make filler have found out a way to make hyaluronic acid very easily, brewing it up like yogurt. And then the filler companies will then cross-link it, and that can make different strengths of hyaluronic acid gel, very much like a jelly. So if you think of a jelly without much gelatin, it would be thin and spready.
Yeah.
And you think of a jelly with a normal amount of jelly, it's kind of wobbly. You think about a jelly made with three times the amount of gelatin, it would be like a firm tube. Dermal fillers are the same. They come in a pre-filled syringe like this.
Yeah.
And that pre-filled syringe, you see that clear gel in the syringe, it's a 1 mil syringe.
Yeah.
This one syringe gets used on one patient.
And that would go where on the face?
So the thin ones you would use in the top surface of the skin for hydration and radiance and glow. And we call those skin boosters. The medium texture ones you'd use in the lips, you'd use it in the folds around the mouth. The more stronger textured ones you might use in the cheeks, and then the really full-on ones you might use in the chin to bring a chin out if someone's chin is a little retruded, or, you know, if they have what we commonly refer to as a weak chin.
Now, we need to point out here that Sarah Hart works in one corner of the industry, injectables. Her medical career started 30 years ago in hospitals and doing locum work in general practice. Then she went back to study psychiatry and the emerging area of cosmetic medicine.
Cosmetic medicine one, essentially. I actually abandoned my psychiatry training because this area was just so innovative and new and exciting.
You know, I guess people might be surprised that you've moved into this area. If you're going to be really critical, you might say, you know, it's such a superficial place
exactly.
to be in.
That's exactly what my mum said. My mum was like, you really want to be doing that? But you know what? I was working in cosmetic medicine beside psychiatry for quite some time, doing both part-time. And it's interesting, the strength of the changes that we make people feel better. It really can be powerful. Our face is our social interaction with the world, and social relationships are incredibly important and have been found to be a key part of longevity, for example. So good social relationships are just as important as diet and exercise in our health and well-being. And so I've witnessed many extremely positive changes for people's lives from doing this, what seems to be trivial and superficial treatments. People report people treating them differently. I mean, it's a sad fact of our humanity that we do judge by appearances. And if someone's face makes them look angry, tired, or sad, we might be less likely to interact with them.
And it seems to be getting more and more that way. Do you think or not? Has it always been that way?
Look, I think it's always been that way. Look, studies show that babies preferentially gaze at faces that are conventionally considered to be beautiful. So there's definitely an innate preference for faces that are more welcoming and inviting. And we tend to look a lot at the eyes and the lips. But I think it is more these days. And I think social media, selfies, filters have driven this immensely. I think that the younger generation is so much more aware of what they look like. And filters have demonstrated very powerfully what a small change in appearance can do. And the younger generation have been used to filtering their appearance. And then that, I think, drives them to change their appearance in real life as well.
And what do you think about that?
I think that's the bad side of what we do. So, you know, I love the good side of what we do, which is making people's faces look more emotionally more inviting. I think the bad side of this area, this field, is overuse, or particularly overuse on young people. And I think that the young people are vulnerable. I think that they need to be protected from impulsive decisions, particularly ones that are presented to them on a very powerful medium like social media.
And when you say overuse, what do you mean by that?
I mean starting treatment with botulinum toxin when they're very young. In their early 20s, perhaps. I believe that's unnecessary for aging. Or I think having the lips made too big, the cheeks made too big, distorting the face, too frequent treatments. And people who are beautiful, they're young. And I think that's the sad side of this field. That is something that I'm seeing more of now than we did in the early days.
And what do you say if someone comes in the door and says, I want my lips fixed?
If I could tell you about a young woman who came in, 22, came in and said, I would like some Botox, but I'm really anxious about it. And I said, well, first tell me why you would like it. And she said, well, all my friends are doing it, and I feel like if I don't do it, I'll miss out. She had no lines on her face at all. And I said, well, you don't need to do Botox when you don't have lines on your face in your early 20s with no lines on your face. There's no evidence to show, there's no studies that show you have to start at that age. There is a social media push that you do, and maybe your peers are folding into that, but go away, put sunscreen on, you really don't need it. And what was wonderful was being able to explain that honestly to her. She was very happy with that.
Mm. It's not just the growing numbers of young people, mostly women, looking for treatment. It is the proliferation of unregulated shops offering things like laser treatment, something that really worries people like dermatologic surgeon Dr. Ken McDonald. He's the chair of the New Zealand Cosmetic Dermatology Surgical Group.
We don't have the Therapeutic Goods Act, which Australia does, and which tends to regulate devices. So if you're a business person, you can buy a device. Now, a laser is a device, and in New Zealand, anyone can buy a laser. The problem is it then crosses into the medical area, but you can almost operate in the medical area by default because you can just buy a device. And then you can say, oh, I can take your sunspots off or your tattoos off and advertise for it. And you don't come under the sorts of controls that doctors do, like with the medical council or the health and disability commissioner, and you don't have the standards that, you know, we would expect. You know, the professional maintenance of equipment, the calibration of and reliability of the devices, the facility electrical standards, laser safety understanding, photobiology, photophysics, those sorts of things, and also basic hygiene and health and safety standards, which are just simply absent in the majority of cheap laser clinics, which can have a very sort of flashy site, and the public really has no clue about what they're in for. And then, of course, you have the issue of people dealing with the skin, which is the largest organ of the body and really a mirror to diseases. And, of course, as we know, there are so many diseases that present on the skin, like melanoma, cancer and inflammatory disease and so on. But you have people who are then using devices on skin with absolutely no idea of diagnosis, no dermatology training, no training in cosmetic medicine. A lot of business people who frankly, have no knowledge, no understanding, in fact, no interest in duty of care or medical ethics or anything like that. The other side of the equation is that, of course, many of the treatments, whether it's hair removal or tattoo removal or other things, are quite inadequate because, you know, the emphasis often is the bottom line and getting people back.
Mm. So, Ken, are you saying that anybody could purchase these machines, like a machine that does laser treatment or microneedling, that kind of thing?
The lasers are a different order to microneedling.
Okay. Is it the lasers that concern you the most?
They can do a lot more damage. The issue with lasers is that used wrongly, and particularly, say, cheap and nasty knockoffs from certain parts of Asia, which don't have proper cooling systems, don't have anything to protect skin, essentially, you're going to get photothermal burns. And we see a lot of those.
So anybody could buy one of these laser machines online, set up a shop somewhere and offer the treatment without needing any or showing any kind of qualification or training in this area?
Yes. Now, there might be a few local regulations in Auckland, and you can talk to Sarah about that, but I don't think they have any teeth. But essentially, that's the case. So you might then advertise that you've done a laser course, but that could be 2 hours online, which is a little bit different to 5 years in medical school, 4 years training, say, as a physician, another 5 years as a dermatologist. I mean, it's not the same.
So how has this been allowed to happen?
I don't think it's anyone sort of allowed it to happen. It's just happened because these are devices and they're not regulated. You know, a few years ago, I mean, it never occurred to us, basically, that any Tom, Dick, and Harry would get one of these machines. But it's happened because clearly it's sort of a medical area. And this is sort of almost happened by default. But there is another important issue, which is that not all the laser companies have what we would consider a proper ethical stance. In other words, they are prepared to sell the devices to anyone who will pay for them. Now, that might not be the case for all lasers. For example, our powerful CO2 resurfacing lasers, because there aren't many of those around at the moment, and there certainly shouldn't be because these are procedures generally which are done under sedation anyway, so it's sort of more surgical. But technically, even the resurfacing lasers could be sold to anyone.
And also, I imagine that people just, you know, might go drop into a laser clinic on the main shopping street because it's advertising, say, hair removal or something like that, pretty cheaply. So they think, oh, I'll just go in there and get.
And if they have a professional website, it probably looks a lot more attractive than our website, for example, which we're probably not concentrating on enough. But, it, you know, so if you Google something and you find something attractive, you might go for that if you don't have an undercurrent of knowledge about the medical side of things. And then things can happen because you would be treated by someone who wouldn't, for example, pick up your early melanoma. They might just think it's an age spot. And after all, now these clinics are advertising for photo rejuvenation. You know, they have IPL machines. They have, which is sort of laser light, but not a laser. It's a light-based system. And you mentioned needling. There are lots of these energy-based systems. But then they say, oh, yes, we can treat that. But they don't know what it is. And so there's a obviously and clearly a failure of diagnosis. So, you know, we would say you're safer if you want these things done, to actually go to one of the bigger clinics, which at least have a medical component. So, because frequently, you know, these light-based devices will say activate herpes simplex, so you'll get sort of bad herpetic infections, and they won't be diagnosed or treated, and they all end up at poor old GP, and then they get scarred, and they have a difficult time, or they get bad staph infections or something, and burns and so on. It eventually ends up with ACC and nobody knows what to do with it.
Gosh.
Because, of course, the other issue in New Zealand, you can't sue.
As you said, you're seeing the results of procedures that have gone wrong all the time. I mean, how many of these procedures are you seeing, these bad laser burns?
Well, because we're so busy, we're just not seeing most of them. You know, we're really short of dermatologists, and that, again, is an issue in itself. Now, I suppose there are exceptions in certain areas like hair removal, where in certain sites, maybe the underarm or bikini line and things, where and they're probably good sites for lower-level clinics to do. But once you're treating hair, which might be over a mole, for example, or over a tattoo, suddenly you get into trouble. You can't teach people about the skin and the diseases of the skin and all the different sorts of lesions that we see. You just can't do that in a few weekend courses.
But what would you like to see happen?
I personally think that lasers should be in a more supervised environment where at least there's access to medical advice and help, and where the health and hygiene standards and health and safety standards are adequate. There've got to be policed standards, and ideally an association with medical clinics so that people can get a prescription for infections, or they can get early skin damage treated in an appropriate way. But if you're talking about dermal fillers, I would never go to a non-medically supervised clinic, because after all, that, you know, worldwide there have been over 500 cases of blindness from dermal fillers. And so you have to know exactly what to do if you start getting into trouble with skin necrosis or failing vision and so on. Now, Botox is a bit safer. Unfortunately, people don't tend to get allergic to it.
The story I read about in Australia, the facial injectables market in Australia is worth $3.9 billion a year and projected to grow by 24% by the end of the decade. And I assume that New Zealand is following similar kind of trends.
So it's big money, and you'll understand that some of the chain clinics, which are certainly better than small operators operating independently who are not properly supervised, but they are now run by private equity companies like KKR in the States. And the bottom line is what matters. This has gone beyond being anything to do with a medical ethical situation. So you have a certain amount of time to treat people. You don't do the complicated things, and you have a whole set of algorithms to put into play if you're having trouble with people. And in the end, if you make your money, then you'll get your bonus or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's bottom line stuff. It's driven by financial considerations, not duty of care or any medical ethical thing. And, you know, there are a number who are driven by social media and who have these dysmorphic states where, you know, once they start, they can't stop and they overdo it and they don't realize how bad they look. And there's no one to guide them.
Trying to research this industry in New Zealand on its own is very convoluted. I mean, there's a lot of different organisations, societies,
yes,
and also a lot of different products out there. Is it regulated at all?
So, yes, it is, but we believe it's not regulated enough. And like many new areas, the legislation is simply didn't even dream of this area. So the Medicines Act from 1981, none of this existed. So you have 1981 legislation trying to deal with the advertising on social media of these products. We think it needs to be better regulated in order to protect the public.
In what way? What would you like to see? I mean, I know in Australia they've brought in some tough new rules over there recently.
Yeah. Look, it's really interesting. In some ways in New Zealand, we've avoided some of the problems that Australia has because the Medical Council has actually put good guidelines in for doctors, but there aren't good guidelines in for other practitioners in the areas yet who may be working in this area. What we were rather excited about was that the Therapeutic Products and Natural Health Act 2023 has just been passed, and that put into legislation the ability to put use and supply restrictions around medical devices. And that's partly because of the problems that medical devices have caused, for example, the vaginal mesh, which has caused terrible problems. And so there is no restriction around the use of that in the same way that there's no restriction around the use of dermal fillers because the legislation doesn't currently allow for any restrictions around medical devices at all. This new legislation that was passed in 2023 allows for restrictions to be put around it, but I'm not sure whether that legislation is going to stand. The coalition government has campaigned on repealing, I think Winston Peters campaigned on repealing that act, and so we're just watching to see what's going to happen.
That's it for today. The Detail is supported by RNZ and NZ On Air. Today's podcast was produced by Gwen McClure and Alexia Russell and engineered by William Saunders. Thanks to Sarah Hart and Ken McDonald. Ka kite.